Calling all Swifties and champions of change, Like a Girl Media is rolling out the red carpet for you with our Thrive Like a Girl contest. We're all about celebrating powerful women leaders who inspire us to dream big and push boundaries. And who embodies that spirit more than Taylor Swift herself? Here's your chance to see her live in concert. We're giving away 2 tickets to Taylor Swift's show in London on Saturday, June 22nd. Imagine being part of the magic, all thanks to Like a Girl Media. Entering is easy. Subscribe, share, and show us which episodes inspired you the most. Visit our website or check our social media for all the details. Don't just dream it, be it. Thrive like a girl and make this summer unforgettable. Contest opens globally, void where prohibited, must be 18 or older to enter, no purchase necessary. Subscribe and share with hashtag Thrive Like a Girl and tag us at likeagirl_media for entry. Unlimited entries means unlimited chances. Winner chosen at random after contest closes May 20th, 2024. Will be notified via DM. Make sure your profiles are not private. Check full rules on our site. This is your shot to see Taylor Swift live. Don't miss it. Hey there, and welcome to the Hit Like a Girl podcast. My name is Joy Rios. On the show, we talk about how complicated healthcare can be. It is the 30,000 piece, the 300,000 piece puzzle that we're all trying to solve. And every one of our guests comes in with their level of expertise and helps us try to make sense of the big picture. Carrie, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks for having me. My name is Carrie Kozlowski. I'm the co-founder and CEO at Upfront Healthcare. Upfront's focused on guiding every patient to get the care they need. And really everything we do is about our mission and how we can hopefully help transform healthcare so that more patients get care and we overcome some of the equity and social barriers and overall move outcomes and population health in the right direction.
Okay, all of that sounds amazing. How do we actually do that? What does it look like?
Fixing healthcare?
Yeah.
It's fun. I think you're asking a really good question. And I think it's an interesting question to ask at a big tech conference, right? Because I don't know that technology is the answer to fixing healthcare.
I agree.
It's a conduit to fixing healthcare. I think what I love in our work, and I love working with our clients, is getting with all the people who have healthcare experience, 20 years, 25 years. Most people that we get to work with are at that stage of, and I've been doing this for a while, I've made some mistakes, I've had some success, and I want to just have this one more impact. I have this mission, I have this idea, I have this vision. Those are the folks that I think are going to be able to move the needle on healthcare, and when we can bring them together through networking, through partnership summits, all those kinds of activities, that's how I think we're ultimately going to fix healthcare. It's multiple voices getting outside the four walls of whether they're a health system or a vendor or an urgent care, and like getting into the meat of what are our biggest challenges.
And what gets to be the meat of what you get to do? I know you get to deal with a lot of data, but if we're talking about access and solutions for the patients, what does that exactly look like?
What we do specifically is we try to empower the patient to be able to take action, and we try to remove friction from the process for them to do that. What that really means is we engage patients using omnichannel technology, but in a hyper-personalized way. So everything we do is thinking about kind of what are the barriers this patient is facing, what's relevant for this patient, when's the right time to outreach to them. I want to engage them, but I want to engage them in a moment that matters so we can capture some mind share. And so all of that ultimately, though, is in this opportunity to guide them to get that care. And I think where we fit in working with all of our clients is part of their transformation and part of how do we really activate patients to be members instead of saying, oh, it's patient-centric, oh, patients are empowered. How do we put the information in their hands at a moment that they're likely to take action and give them all of the answers to their questions so they don't have any reason not to?
Where are those meaningful moments? How do you do that? Is it a text message, like right when somebody at the right time? Like, how does that work?
The answer is it depends, right? It depends on the person. And so one of the things we try to do is understand what people's motivations are. We apply psychographics. We built a psychographics for healthcare model. It's the only one that exists. And it really understands what influence and motivates decisions that people make around their healthcare. That's one thing. But we also think about relevancy. So when you think about a campaign-based approach, if you tell me it's October, Carrie, it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, you should get your mammogram. What you're telling me is you know that I'm a woman and you know it's October. And you probably know how old I am, roughly, right? But what if we could tell people, which is what we do, hey, it's been 11 months since your last mammogram. Getting this care is important. Here's why it's important. And here's where you can get it, where you had it scheduled last time. Let's get you scheduled now. And you don't have to wait on the phone if you don't want to, right? Mm-hmm. And kind of just take all of that friction and make it really easy. Then I feel like you're actually easing my way on the path to continuing to partake in my preventive care versus marketing to me, which right. can feel insincere sometimes and not necessarily a way that builds my trust.
So can we talk about the psychographics and building trust? Like, I would love to geek out on that.
Yeah, it is geeked out on, and I am not the deepest person on this because we have a ton of really smart data science, consumer science, behavior science people at Upfront who think about this all the time. What I think is fascinating is we think about this from kind of the most proactive person who engages in their care. They're called the self-achiever. This is the person who, hey, attacks their goals, won't like is competitive against their goals, like is just going to win when it comes to kind of the healthcare. All the way through, we think about kind of the more reactive is the willful endurer. This is the person who will, you know, it's not hurting that bad. It's fine. Preventive care sort of lost because it's not super convenient. That feels so far away when something might happen. And so they have really different ways in which they engage with healthcare, and then we have everything in between. So a self-achiever, let's attack your goals, let's get after it, versus a willful endurer, hey, let's make it really convenient. These are the folks, 60% of urgent care visits or 60-something percent of urgent care visits are done by willful endurers.
Is there a way to self-assess? Because I feel like there's times that I've been proactive and I'm like, oh, I've definitely been a willful endurer. Like, yeah. I didn't see and go get any help for my back pain until I like couldn't move it at all. And I'm like, me? Why did I do that?
There's a classifier test quiz, you know, on our website that you can take, upfronthealthcare.com. You can find it there. And it is really fun to take and kind of see how it reflects back at you. Nobody's 100% of any one element though. So it'll kind of give you your primary approach. But in a, you know, you might be 60% of a willful endurer and 40% of a balance seeker. The thing, the other piece of it that's interesting to me also is how we speak to people. Because in healthcare, most marketing, and you think about pharma marketing, it really is about doctor says, doctor knows best. Only about 17% of the population believes their doctor knows best. Mm. And so when we market that way, we're really off-putting many people. For example, there's a group of people we call balance seekers. That's what I am, who want the evidence. Show me the evidence, give me the research. Okay, I can make this decision because everything is telling me that's the right thing to do. And I'm well-informed now to take that. So this is where all of it fits together in a really unique way to kind of speak. Hey, Carrie, let's attack that goal and get your mammogram. Hey, Carrie, we can get your mammogram with the location down the street in the next 2 days. Let's get you scheduled.
Like that those is the kind of thing. So when I think about why I took so long, I'm like, oh, I'm going to make an appointment and my appointment's probably not going to be for 2 or 3 months from now because I have to get a referral. So I've got to go through a telehealth appointment to then get a referral. It's going to be 3 months. And what if my back doesn't hurt in 3 months when the day of my appointment or in the same way or something? I'm like, how do I express that my pain level or whatever it is that I'm experiencing today right now, because it's awful, it feels terrible, but then the time in between, right? Then I'm like, well, maybe it'll just get better.
You might be a willful endurer. Sounds like that. I think in all of those cases, what we really want to focus on is the patient, and we don't want to limit to the psychographics. That's the other piece that's important, because how we initially motivate you and speak to you, but we've also got to have technology that allows you to easily make appointments, easily understand care. And we need to think about how we nudge you on that journey, right? What is the behavior science around how you are likely to accept information? How many times can we help you remind you before you want to opt out? How do we find that sweet spot where we can kind of, using behavioral science and psychographics, help patients get
I like there? I appreciate the idea of like, oh, we can get you in 2 days. I'm like, oh, that's quantitative. I'm happy about that. Like, I will make a move because I can schedule it into my week right now. It's not like off in the distant future, some random time. But who knows? I might be in Chicago that week, right?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I think this is where the access challenge comes in. When we initially started thinking about what we wanted to build in our patient engagement platform, I personally had maybe a bias with this concept of, okay, well, what we should be looking at is what type of visit and what kind of sickness does a patient have? And maybe if you have an ear infection, you should go to urgent care. And if you have diabetes, you should see your primary care physician. But the reality is it's not about disease or visit type. It is about each individual person. And if you get your A1C on time, regularly at the urgent care, then you should do that. And if you really need to see your physician when you have an ear infection, because that's how your continuity of care and that's the value you place on your loyalty, then you should do that. And so this has been a really interesting and enlightening journey for me to learn about how people make decisions and how we can look through a different lens, essentially, to help solve this challenge.
I'm curious because the psychographic part is actually, from what I understand, a relatively new part of your business, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how did that get involved? From what I understand, there was an acquisition? Yes?
Yes.
Okay, first of all, just as an entrepreneur, I'm just like, how was that journey? Because on the business side, not even the health or technology side, like that's a whole other nut to crack.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when we think about growing our business over the years, and we're fortunate to have a number of really strategic healthcare investors. And so we have a really strong group of advisors, board members, and senior leadership who have been in healthcare for 20, 25 years. So we have really great networks. What that means is that over the years, we are building relationships with folks who are doing other really cool things to help patients. And over time, you start to find people who are mission aligned to you, who are maybe approaching it in a slightly different way, and you figure out what's complementary. I think it's really important in entrepreneurship to not approach everyone as a competitor and to kind of take a little bit more of an open mind and a broader lens to how you see the universe. And I think that's really where this opportunity came up. We acquired a company, Patient Bond, about 15 months ago, but we've known them for 5, 6, 7 years and have been talking to them all along the journey about our respective approaches to what we were doing.
And did it feel like you guys were competing with one another? Or were you trying to solve the same problems?
I think we were trying to solve similar problems, which is to help patients get care. Their approach was very psychographic driven. Our approach was very behavioral science driven. We can skip the chocolate and peanut butter analogy here. But what was interesting is we were also approaching it in different market segments. And so that's really what also made it interesting from a business perspective for us, is to be able to think more upstream. You think about guiding every patient to get care. Like, our work had historically been primarily with health systems and large medical groups. Their work primarily in big urgent care, as well as vendors who do care management and specialty pharmacy. And so now we're really working with the continuum of care, which is also, as an entrepreneur and someone thinking about product strategy all the time, super fun because I get so much more direct input from people living in this every single day to think about what does our product need to do and how do we need to continually evolve it.
So one of the conversations that even has just been showing up today is about receiving feedback and also receiving negative feedback, right? Of just like, what is not working? What are the challenges? And how does that show up for you? Is it something that you get excited about or feel threatened by?
It's a great question. So I had the experience with the last company that Ben started, he's my co-founder at Upfront, when that company was ultimately acquired, we went to the advisory board. And at the advisory board, one of their core values was running to criticism. And that was a little bit hard for me to learn, you know, 10, 15 years ago, kind of how do you kind of approach feedback in this way? It was such a great experience because it really pivoted my way of thinking about feedback as from a place of curiosity versus a place of defensiveness. And so I think that has been a huge part of how we try to approach feedback. Now we have a core value called continuous improvement. And that really encompasses the idea that feedback is how we continue to get better and understand what the market needs.
And does that happen just on an external basis or also internal? Do you have dialogues internally as well?
Internally, it's on process, right? People in process, and how can we help our teams work efficiently? How can they feel more supported? What can we learn from them? As we've grown the company, you're further and further from the day-to-day pieces of what it takes to implement a client or code a new piece of product or, you know, decide what we do next. And so I think that part is really great from the team's perspective. And then obviously we're always looking to hear from our clients and drive that feedback. And we have partnerships like KLAS who help give us that feedback on a regular basis too.
Okay, so I'm going to shift gears and just thinking about you as an amazing woman leader. For somebody who, if you consider yourself as like, you've gone down a path that other people can follow, the generic advice question, but really, if somebody is trying to follow in your footsteps, like what lesson have you learned over your career that they might be able to hopscotch, right? Like, guess what? I had a problem. You could skip it.
The advice I guess I would give in terms of skipping a problem, I think it's not thinking you know the answer to things. So when you're starting a company, you have a hypothesis and you have an idea of what the market needs. And you can start pursuing that and you can get wrapped in your mission really easily and you can defend what you're doing because you're wrapped in your mission. And What we've always tried to do and what I've learned over time is I don't know every answer, right? And I don't have to know all the answers. And there's some pressure you can feel as an entrepreneur of like knowing how to solve people's problems. I think listening and having the ability to flex and be agile in how you're thinking, what we originally envisioned our company kind of doing and how, where we are now, it's adjusted over time, right? And I think you talked when I saw you in Chicago about the path versus the road, right? The road is linear, it's straight, it's paved, it's kind of hard and cold, but you know which way you're walking, right? Versus a path, you meander and you listen and you, well, there's something interesting over here and there's something interesting over here. And I think that's the best way to build a business ultimately is to be highly engaged with the market, with your clients, with prospects that you're speaking to, but, and also your team. Your team's having different conversations. How can they influence you?
I love that. I mean, so for anybody who, well, most people weren't in that room, right? And that was a really fun analogy. And I got it off of an Instagram post that I follow, The Growth Equation. And they really talked about roads versus paths. Roads being, like you said, hard, structured. They've been built. Their infrastructure. You have a point A, point B. There's clear on-ramp, clear off-ramp. And if you get lost, you know, like the quickest thing you're going to do is try to get back on the road. But paths are totally different. They take into account the environment. They're responsive. You know, as long as you're going in a general direction, you could go across a stream. You could stop and climb a tree. You could stop and pet a cat, you know, bring somebody along the way. It's just like the general direction that you're going. And I love that analogy. And I love that it resonated with you.
Very much.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Well, Carrie, thank you for being here and for showing up as an amazing leader in our community. And if people want to follow or connect with you or your organization, where would you direct them?
First, LinkedIn is the best place to find me, Carrie Kozlowski. And then our website, upfronthealthcare.com, which also feeds into our LinkedIn, so you can find us there too.
Okay, thanks, fantastic. Joy. Yeah, thank you.
It's wonderful to see you.
Always. Thanks for listening. You can learn more about us or this guest by going to our website or visiting us on any of the socials with the handle HitLikeAGirlPod. Thanks again. See you soon. Again, thank you so much for listening to the Hit Like a Girl podcast. I am truly grateful for you, and I'm wondering if you could do me a quick favor. Would you be willing to follow or subscribe to this podcast, or maybe leave us a rating or review? Or if you're feeling extra generous, would you share this episode on your Instagram stories or with a friend? All those things help us podcasters out so much. I'm the show's host, Joy Rios, and I'll see you next time.